Eye on Careers in association with Laymoon.com. Refresh your career with jobs, courses, and events.
Welcome to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And this show is for everyone out there who has a dream. Sometimes that dream just might be getting a promotion, maybe just a raise. For others, it's building a billion-dollar business. And for others, it's just opening that small bakery around the corner. But whatever it is, Eye on Careers is here to help you make that a reality. And the first thing I think, you know, we need to ask ourselves is, what is it that makes you great? What is it that allows you to rise up? And why is it some people's dreams become reality and others die with them? I heard one of my mentors saying that the graveyard has the most wealth in the world, because when you go there, it's full of dead dreams and empires that were never built, businesses that were never started, degrees that were never finished. And how many dreams die with us? If you died today, would your dream die with you? Or are you living your dream today? Well, tonight we have a few people in the studio who are actually living their dreams. And I guess I wanted to open with this song, which will be opening the World Cup, from a suggestion from my friend Andre. Because what bigger dream is it than to play in the World Cup for so many of those football players out there? And tonight we're going to be looking at people who are living their dream, who are doing their dream job, who had the courage, who had the work ethic, who had the vision, who had the direction to go after and chase their career, their dream. And our first guest is Jim Tapper, Managing Partner, Leadership and Talent Consulting, Middle East, for one of the largest, if not the largest, executive search and leadership services company in the world, Korn Ferry International. This guy works with the top CEOs, the top chairman, the top boards all over the world. I haven't asked them, so I think they even have a CEO school. I mean, that's the level that they are operating at. And so we're going to find out what actually makes not just top performers tick, but also high potentials tick, which I think Jim will be talking about. The importance of identifying those high potential employees is almost as important, if not more important, than identifying your top performers as well. And then we have another person who also chased their dream and started their own business, the entrepreneurial route. The founder of MyFarah.com, which is one of the leading wedding websites in the Arab world, Zain Malas, who will be giving her insights into how it all started. So it is a star-studded cast this evening, but at the end of the day, you know, if you want to know what it takes to make your dream a reality or to rise up in that next rung in the ladder, the best thing to do is to listen and talk to and hang out with people who are in that cadre of individuals who are doing just that, who are finding that success. And that's where the answers lie. It's really that simple. Success can be really a simple thing when you look at it that way. But let's hear a little bit more about Jim Tapper and his background.
This is Eye on Careers Executive CV.
Jim Tapper is a senior partner in Korn Ferry Leadership and Talent Consulting Practice, based in the firm's London and Dubai offices. He leads the Korn Ferry Leadership and Talent Consulting Practice in the Middle East. Mr. Tapper brings significant top-level consulting experience to the firm, substantial industry credentials, and a variety of executive experience in major corporate change programs. Prior to joining the firm, Mr. Tapper was chief executive of a London-based Center for High Performance Development and its U.S. parent company, Capital H Group, an international leadership services consultancy. Mr. Tapper holds a Juris Doctorate degree from Georgetown University Law Center and a Bachelor of Arts degree from the Georgetown University College of Arts and Sciences. He speaks English and French.
That That is one impressive background. A true advisor to the C-suite, Mr. Jim Tapper. Welcome to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane. I'm delighted to be here.
I think this song is fitting for the economic climate we're in. I think we were just talking and you were telling me how even your office in London now is doing fantastically well. It's all right now.
Well, it is. I mean, with the economic recovery, we're starting to see companies hire people again, feeling confident, and it's happening everywhere, really.
It's an interesting conundrum, though, because on one hand, they're hiring again, but I read that the attrition rates are actually going to go up because those top performers who were riding out the storm, they're now like, well, this is a good environment to make a move in. And so all of a sudden you may see this outrush of talent from these organizations.
Yeah, people sort of stayed where they were because it was a sure thing. And now people are looking to move maybe and get some varied experience. So that very well could happen.
So yeah, some people are saying you might see a 25% increase in the attrition rate. So it's a double whammy for those people who've gone through a dry spell who really maybe weren't that employable. You're going to have, one, an increase in job openings, and two, people are leaving, so a lot more movement in these corporations.
25% would be a very large number for attrition rates. There's always churn in the employment, but 25% would be
increase,
pretty high.
25% increase. So if you're 8%, and then 25%, you'd go up to 10.
Mm.
So, but not.
No, that
not
would be
25.
Scary.
It wouldn't. It's. I mean, probably not that abnormal in some companies in the Middle East.
you would
find, but maybe you could just tell us a little bit more about exactly what you do, because it's a very unique and niche kind of premium service that you offer.
Yeah, well, as you said, Korn Ferry started out as an executive search firm, and for many years that's all we did. But about 10 years ago, our CEO decided we, being the number one executive search firm in the world, he decided we needed to stay relevant to our clients and our shareholders and stakeholders. And so we embarked on a broadening of our services to become more of a talent partner for our clients. So in addition to finding the right talent, it's all about retaining the right talent, developing the right talent, and placing people in the right jobs for the right business strategies. So my part of the company, which is our leadership and talent consulting business, does a lot to help companies understand their talent better, where the high potentials lie within an organization, where the capability lies, and the things they're good at and the things that they can develop, so that you can make the most out of the most precious asset that you have, which is your people.
And, you know, you made an interesting distinction between high potentials and high performers.
Mm.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. So if you're in a job today and you're doing it day in and day out and you're very good at that job, you're a high performer. And you can be counted on to do the right thing and to get the job done. But actually, many companies say because Bob or Sally is a good performer, we ought to promote him or her, put them in another job. Maybe it's a bigger job. Maybe it's in a different part of the company because we know that they've been successful before. The problem with that is what got you someplace may not get you to the next place. So what you really have to look at is the potential of that individual. Are they able to learn new kinds of ways to get success in the next job, the broader job, the different job? That's what potential is all about. It's about learning from experience and applying it.
And, you know, I think one of the things I heard was that at some point everybody gets promoted beyond their competency. And I think that maybe that's another way of saying what you were just describing.
They can do if companies pay attention only to the performance and not to the potential.
And you know, there was an interesting study done by Stanford Dr. Pfeiffer who looked at, okay, what is it that drives, you know, huge salaries? And one of the things he looked at was actually performance. And he found out that actually there was a lot of CEOs with very poor performance who are taking home huge salaries.
Mm.
And so it actually is a low variance in terms of performance and pay. And now you're saying that also performance should be very lowly tied to promotion, which is an interesting concept as well.
It should be a factor, for sure, because mm-hmm. you don't want somebody who has a record of not being able to do the job. But it's not the only factor, and in fact, it's not something that is necessarily positioning someone for success.
And so this is, I guess, one of the trends is moving into an emotionally intelligent organization where you're now looking at these other factors and taking the potential factor, or I think what you call agility, into consideration.
So a lot of companies, particularly companies that are maturing in their talent management processes, are starting to look at potential in a different way. And they're saying, how can we really measure this to be able to say, this person is the right person to put in a job because they're positioned for success? And the way my company has actually been looking at this and researching it for about 20, 25 years is around the concept of learning agility. And learning agility is your ability to learn from the past and apply those lessons in first time or very highly complex situations. So if you think about it, that's what makes potential, the ability to face a new situation and be successful in it. And that means you're learning all the time, you're processing information, and you're applying it. It can be measured, and that's the important thing, because in the past, companies, as I said before, mix up potential and performance. But potential can be measured, and you can actually measure learning agility by a number of different ways so that you can get a picture of the right talent and putting that person in the right job position for success.
And I know there's so many people out there who feel they haven't reached their full potential and they're waiting for that opportunity to unleash that inner potential. But we're going to hear more about that and how you can unleash this and use these concepts to drive your career to new heights. This is Jim Tapper, Managing Partner, Leadership and Talent Consulting Middle East at Korn Ferry International. We're going to hear more of his insights into what makes a successful executive, what makes a successful company in just a minute. Welcome back to Eye on Careers. So we are looking at how do we untap your potential. We have a man who's traveled the globe working with some of the most high-performance teams, high-performance companies in the market today. He's an advisor to chief executive officers, to chairman of companies, on their most valuable asset, their talent. And he's looking at how do you unlock that potential of a team? How do you create that peak performance within an organization? Here to shed some light on a very deep topic is Mr. Jim Tapper, Managing Partner for Leadership and Talent Consulting Middle East. Jim, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
It's a pleasure to be here. So with you, and you know, we were just talking about the difference between how companies need to cognizantly make a distinction between identifying our top performers and identifying our high potentials, and that there's a big difference there. But how does the average person use this concept to help drive, you know, their own success moving forward?
So the concept of learning agility that we were talking about just a minute ago is about applying the lessons of the past to new situations. So if you think about that, it's something that can be developed. We can all develop it. It's not hardwired in our brains. And one of the key elements that you can think about to develop it is your self-awareness. And there are three elements of self-awareness that you can work on that will really help you become more aware of your impact on other people and therefore your ability to influence others and become a good leader. First thing is to seek feedback. Ask for feedback on a meeting that you've just come out of, on a presentation you've just given. Don't wait for the usual performance round of feedback, but ask people, you know, how could I have done something better in the latest thing that we did together? The second thing is about reflecting. So why do people view me that way? What is it about the way I present that makes people view me that way? And the third thing, and this is the most important thing, is acting on that feedback. So it builds a muscle of self-improvement, continuous improvement, when you act on something, even if you don't agree with the feedback. You build that muscle. That's the first thing. And the second thing is, when you're viewed acting on something that people have given you feedback on, you demonstrate authentic leadership, which means you walk the talk. And that's an incredibly powerful image for people, and it creates followership. So if you really want to be an effective leader, think about the way you're perceived, act on the way you're perceived, and build that muscle of continuous improvement.
I think you touch on a fascinating topic, which I always find almost amusing, in that, you know, when you deal with a lot of the leaders here, they're so concerned with, you know, what I'm thinking, what my vision is, communicating that. And then even when they review, it's like, this is what I think about your performance. And it's really one way, but really the determinant factor is, it doesn't matter what I want you to do or what I want you to think. And it matters what you think of me, how you're interpreting my message, not what my message is. In fact, the reality of my message is immaterial. And it doesn't seem to, you know, is this concept actually taking foot? Are people actually grasping it?
Absolutely. It's the most talked about approach to measuring and developing potential in the marketplace today. Companies all over the world are thinking about it. But actually, when you think about good leaders out there, and we've accumulated about 1.5 million profiles of senior executive leaders around the world. And when you think about the higher you go in an organization, the more you have to rely on other people. So your impact on other people becomes incredibly important as a leader. Look at Sheikh Mohammed, who's a visionary. And, you know, he sets the tone, provides the infrastructure, and people here come here and they're successful here because, you know, he knows that he can't do everything. He can provide the framework for other people to be successful.
And he's actually unusually accessible, you know, to your point, where if you wanted to actually give him feedback, he drives his own car. Mm-hmm. You can actually see him in the shopping mall walking around sometimes. It's unbelievable how accessible he is for one of the most prolific leaders of all time.
Well, that's a really good point, because our studies show that the most successful leaders, their style with other people is about being approachable and being collaborative. And so the top 20% performers of leaders around the world from that big database I just mentioned are those that are most approachable and most collaborative or participative in the way that they do their business.
But, you know, on the same time, is it that they're collaborative, they have an ear, they listen, but at the same time, somebody needs to be at the helm to take the decision. Like, at the end of the day, you know, if you're running all these committees and running your organization like a democracy, you are basically watering down any good ideas. You know, if you want to paint the barn red and I want to paint it, you know, green, at the end of the day, we get some weird purple color, which nobody's happy with, right? You know, how does that, where does the line drawn for the leader that you at some point have to be, you know, the guy who's taking a decision or the lady who's taking a decision?
Well, you know, it doesn't mean that you don't take the tough decisions. It just means that in order to get the best ideas around the table, you stay open to that kind of participative approach or a collaborative approach. At the end of the day, you know, the buck stops with the leader of the organization, and that leader has to know when to take the decision.
It's not a democracy.
Usually not.
which is the best model, though, I think, you know, is where you have someone, you know, like a Steve Jobs driving that vision, that direction. But how does this now apply into the Middle East? You know, are companies here really now the next big thing is how do we find our potential, or what's really happening, or what are you seeing on the ground here?
It's fascinating to see the development of companies here in the Middle East, in the Gulf region particularly. There are sort of three specific changes that we're seeing that this concept of agility actually applies to. One is about the diversification of organizations. So organizations or companies that have been doing business in the region are now diversifying outside of the region and into different kinds of companies. So the portfolios of businesses are growing into different sectors. The second thing you were seeing is companies that have had these siloed organizations underneath their umbrella before, with very little cross-fertilization, are now looking to knit them together into a unified sort of whole with common views of what good looks like for leadership, common views of the values in those businesses to make them successful. And so if you think about that, plus the drive for localization or nationalization of the employees, you need leaders that are more agile than before. You need leaders that can think beyond the silo and think more broadly and apply lessons into new situations. And you also, if you're a company that's bringing, let's say, in Emiratis into jobs to increase employment of the locals, then you need to make sure that you put people in a job that where they're positioned for success. And the way to do that is to understand their learning agility. So you can de-risk some of those things by employing a concept like this and be better suited for success.
Does breaking down these silos bring into different challenges, like culture, for example? You know, you can see this happen in some of the universal banks, for example, where they have investment banking, corporate banking, and private equity. And, you know, your shared services are a real mess because the private equity guys are saying, I get carry, and, you know, when they exit a deal, they're taking these huge multi-million dollar bonuses. And the corporate bankers are saying, well, what's this all about? You can't do that. And so they water down each other, and you don't really get a fit in terms of, you know, getting the culture to match the business, to match the vision, to match the incentives and the strategy, and getting alignment. Isn't that creating more issues?
Well, it is. I mean, it's a matter of what I call cultural dexterity. So can you operate in different kinds of business cultures? And also, can you move with a business culture that's changing? You mentioned the banks. We're seeing a lot of culture change in banks all around the world today because they've lost the faith, they've lost the allegiance and the faith of their customers because of all of the problems over the last years. And so a lot of banks are trying to remake their culture to be much more customer-focused, to be much more service-oriented, and to solve the financial problems of their customers rather than, you know, trying to take their money for whatever reason. So that requires a great deal of cultural dexterity from the bankers that have been doing business in a certain way for many, many years. Measuring that, in fact, can be done through some of this agility stuff that we're talking about. One of the elements of learning agility is people agility, and that's a big important element of cultural dexterity.
People agility.
Mm-hmm. So there are five factors of this agility concept that we've been talking about. People agility is one of them. Embracing diversity of thought around the table, or different, being able to deal with different kinds of people. There's mental agility, which is problem solving in new situations. There's change agility, which is about being able to embrace change, organizational change. There's results agility, getting over the line in a new situation. And then there's the self-awareness that we were just talking about. So those five elements are the things that make up the agility in us.
And then you have testing that you put an executive through, which is, what is it, like multiple choice, or is it...
Yeah, there are different ways of measuring it. You can do it through interviews. You can do it. It's not an obstacle course. We don't make you climb rock walls.
That would have been cool, though.
Yeah, it could be fun. You have to be agile to climb a rock wall, I suppose.
Yeah.
But this is more about, I mean, we can measure it through interview and also through online psychometric testing.
Right. And then you said, there's things you can do to increase it. Like, what are some of the exercises I could do?
So if you found that... you were very high on mental agility, which is loving the complexity of a problem. That could be a problem because you might like to analyze things so much that you don't really finish and you don't get over the line and get results done. So it's applying in that situation, the thing you could do is to apply the 80-20 rule very clearly, saying, well, you know, enough is enough. I've analyzed this enough. I've done 80% of what I'm usually comfortable with. I'll leave the other 20% and get on with doing the job. That means you break that cycle of over-analysis, and you become more agile as a result.
This is Mr. Jim Tapper, who is the partner for Leadership and Talent Consulting in the Middle East for Korn Ferry International, sharing some of his insights after a lifetime of work of advising and optimizing teams for CEOs, for chairmen, some of the biggest corporations in the world. We're going to hear more from him in just a minute. Welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips, and we are listening to a man by the name of Mr. Jim Tapper, who's managing partner for Leadership and Talent Consulting in the Middle East for Korn Ferry International. Jim helps advise companies on how to manage their talent, how to retain their talent, how to optimize their talent, how to unleash, identify, and unleash the potential of the talent within their teams and within individuals. So if you feel like you haven't really reached your full potential yet, if you really think that the next role you get into will be the one that unlocks the lion within you, Jim may be able to help you do that. Jim, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you very much, Shane. I'm delighted to be here.
And so I guess when when you look at everything you're doing, it's all around leadership and talent. But I think one of the fundamental questions I guess we then have to ask is, you know, what is leadership? What allows someone to become a great leader? Why is it that, you know, someone like Sheikh Mohammed is able to build one of the biggest success stories of the decade? And, you know, someone like Gaddafi, for example, who had all these resources, missed the mark slightly.
Mm. The question of what is leadership is an industry. So it's an industry I work in. But very simply put, leadership, in my experience, is providing an example and a role model for people that you work with, and creating followership among people, not because they have to follow you, but because they want to follow you. And so we talked earlier today about being very approachable and collaborative in nature when you're dealing with other people. And that's what really top-flight leaders demonstrate. The other thing that top-flight leaders demonstrate is a thinking style or a problem-solving style that is what we call analytical. So that means that you can process a number of variables and come up with a number of options, or you're looking for a number of variables through a number of variables for the best single option. So that analytical thinking style combined with approachability and collaboration is really, those are the some of the important components of leadership.
And, you know, when you look at someone who is, sometimes you can go into a room and you have, say, 10 executives in there, and, you know, the most senior individual has the title chief executive officer. And then you may have the junior guy who's in there taking notes for his partner, and he or she, or whoever it is not the most senior, but all of a sudden they take leadership of that room. Right. And I believe that comes down to value, right? Mm-hmm. You know, do you value your profession? You know, when I talked to the CEO of NBC, who we're talking about, was the largest media company, Sam Burnett, mm-hmm. he feels that one of the most important industries in the Middle East is media. And he says, you know, Shane, look at what we did during the Arab Spring, the role that we played in bringing the Arab message to the world in a positive light. He goes, you know, we're the fourth estate of society, you know, and someone who values it that much, automatically you're have what I call intellectual curiosity. You're reading about your profession and you're bringing knowledge to the table, and all of a sudden which can supersede rank and position. And so I was just wondering, where does value and these kind of concepts fit into mm-hmm. your larger model?
So that's a really interesting point, because what you were talking about there are two things. The way I sort of tease it out, one is passion. Having passion for the thing that you do can be infectious, and that's a way of creating followership. When you provide that role model to others that you're interested in, you have that intellectual curiosity, you're interested in what you do, and you're passionate about it, people hear that, people see it. The other thing you mentioned is intellectual curiosity. And that is a component of the agility concept, too. So that's when you demonstrate intellectual curiosity, it's about wanting to learn. And wanting to learn is the first step to being able to solve new problems in different ways. So both of those things are important for leaders to be successful.
To have that passion, that drive. And I think the last one, when you really look at some of the top performing individuals, is focus, isn't it? I mean, some of these people, like Steve Jobs, was psychotically focused to the point where he was breaking into the computer lab when it was closed. I mean, this is like a psychotic level of focus, right? Arnold Schwarzenegger did the same thing. He broke into the gym when it was closed. I mean, where does focus, and is psychotic level of focus required to reach that top 1%?
Well, I wouldn't say psychotic focus is necessary, but focus is obviously key. I mean, you need to keep your eye on the ball, as they say, and make sure that you're doing the right thing. One of the things that I think is important too leading by example and providing the role model is living the values of the organization that you're leading. A lot of organizations spend time and effort to define the values of their company and want people to behave a certain way. And if it's just lip service to the values and the leaders don't demonstrate that, then they won't create that followership through the organization. So demonstrating that, you know, you walk the talk, it's what we call authentic leadership, that you walk the talk and you live those values is incredibly important to provide that kind of provide that example that creates followership.
It's kind of like the bank that's breeding, you know, talking about integrity and so on, and next thing you know, they're laundering Mexican drug money.
Exactly.
You know, the sentiment, I find, you know, what they're saying now because of what you're just pointing out is that the sentiment towards the institution is at an all-time low in the past century. And that is now that they say 36% of most people working for a Fortune 500 company today will go and become an entrepreneur for the simple reason they can't find an organization that resonates with their values.
Mm-hmm. And knowing yourself well enough to understand what that value system is incredibly important as well. So knowing about what motivates you and what you believe is right, the difference between right and wrong for your own value system, allows you to make that kind of decision and to either go off and do something entrepreneurial or find the right organization as a corporate home for you.
Do you think that's one of the defining factors when you look at individuals who are rising to the top and those who are just not really reaching their full potential, is that the individual who's rising to the top is looking within and trying to build on their own capabilities, understand themselves, understand what drives them, and the person who's really maybe not growing as quickly is focused on opportunities in the market, is really more looking outside themselves and not paying as much attention to themselves as they should?
No, I wouldn't agree with that. I think that at the core, you have to understand yourself and understand what you're good at and the things that make you successful and apply that appropriately. But that's almost a prerequisite. The really successful ones are able to work with that and stay focused on the marketplace and lead by example, saying, you know, if you use the banks a few times as an example tonight.
Well, we're in, you know, banker bashing is you know, the trend right
yeah.
now.
So. Well, I'm a recovering lawyer by training, and so I'm glad that the bankers are getting a bit of stick now. But the important thing there, I think, is that you know, staying focused on the marketplace, staying focused on winning in the marketplace, is what and keeping others focused that way is where you can distinguish between good leaders and great leaders. Yeah, so they're keeping people focused on what matters, serving customers and doing the right thing for customers. That business about understanding yourself, understanding values, I think that's a prerequisite for the foundation for good leadership.
And so, you know, the first thing someone can do if they want to start utilizing this is simply ask for feedback from people. And most of the time, leaders, I don't know if you find this in this region, they don't necessarily ask for feedback. You know, they're quite happy to give feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Is that an issue?
Well, you know, it varies in cultures around the world. Even in Japan, where leaders are very stone-faced sometimes and you don't see a lot of emotion expressed, they're very observant. And so they know what people are saying about them or thinking about them, even though they may not express it. So you see that kind of self-knowledge gained in different ways in different cultures. I would venture to guess that the leaders that you're saying here that may not be seeking feedback are probably hearing it.
Do you think that some, you know, a lot of companies say, oh yes, we believe in this, we have a 360 degree feedback system and we have this, you know, people can rate their managers. Is this just not a bunch of hoopla, like it's a bunch of window dressing, that a lot of these 360s are rigged? Like, no one's really going to say, yes, my manager, you know, because your promotion's on the line, your bonus is on the line. How, you know, valid is doing this 360? Is it, you know, what's your take on that?
They can be very useful. It's how they're used. So, for example, you can have a 360 degree feedback process where people don't get to choose their raters. That way, you know, you make sure they don't choose their friends or their colleagues who are going to give them a good, necessarily a really good report. So that's one way of deflating for the socially acceptable feedback. But getting that feedback in a 360 kind of approach is just half the battle. It's how you use that information within the organization and how you use it as an individual. So a lot of companies today are moving from just having those tools as a tick in the box to say that we have this in our performance management system.
Exactly.
They're moving beyond that, and they're saying, okay, I've spent money on this program of finding out about what other people think about this executive. Now, what am I going to do with that information? How can I use it to make my people better? And they're realizing that once they've done that and they've got that information, they can use it in ways that are going to add, as you said before, value to their most precious asset, which is their people. So, particularly here in the region, we're seeing a lot of companies graduating from just having some of these tools to really starting to use them in ways that propel them to greater success.
Well, I hope you're right. I mean, I have very rarely come across a leader who's saying, you know, well, the first thing I want to do is find out what the people think, how they're reacting to me, or what they think of me. Mm. It seems to be the minority by far. But I think, you know, as we're moving forward, the organizations are becoming more emotionally intelligent. We have to just stop there for a quick second. But this is Jim Tapper, Managing Partner for Leadership and Talent Consulting Middle East for Korn Ferry International, sharing his insights on how to create a more emotionally intelligent environment, how to unleash your potential, how to increase your executive agility, your learning agility as you move forward. And we'll be talking about some more concepts to help you reach the next level of performance in your own career in just a minute. Hello and welcome back to Eye on Careers. I'm your host, Shane Phillips. And we are here in the studio with a very special guest, Mr. Jim Tapper, who is the Managing Partner for Leadership and Talent Consulting Middle East. Jim, welcome back to Eye on Careers.
Thank you, Shane.
So we were just having a bit of a discussion on the break about, you know, what some of the big trends are and how organizations are going to react to the 21st century. And I think one of the interesting questions is, when you look at how CEOs communicate or how they communicate a message, they're either speaking in the language of economics, in the language of accounting, or the language of strategy. And that's because, you know, over time we've developed paradigms of thought around how to think about economics, how to think about and academia has produced research around these paradigms of thought. But invariably, and I may be a bit biased as an executive search consultant, but the most important thing in your company is not your economics, it's your people, because without the people, it doesn't work. It's the human factor. Mm. And they say one of the biggest changes we're going to see is that we're going to have a unifying paradigm of thought for how to deal with the human factor. So today, the CEO cannot approach his board and say, you know, as per Jungian theory, we must align the subconscious drivers of our and he will be shown the door, right? Because that's not the language of business. So as we move forward, one of the defining moments of our civilization, of a corporation in the 21st century, a business in the 21st century, will be the emergence of a unifying paradigm of thought of how to deal with the human factor in your company. I don't know if you would agree or disagree with that.
I do agree, and one of the things we've seen, particularly since the economic downturn around the world, is that the people agenda is higher on the C-suite agenda than it ever has been, certainly in my career going back 30-some years. And so chief executives and the C-suite are today spending more time thinking about, do I have the right people? Where do I get the right people? Where do I put the people I have? Because it's a precious asset. So that's the first thing. The human capital issue is much higher on the agenda. What you described about having this sort of human capital paradigm for communication, I tend to think of in the context of culture. And that's the way I see it playing out today around Europe and here in the Middle East as well. When you talk about leaders communicating to their people, understanding how they're going to treat each other and how they're going to treat their customers and the way they do business, their ways of working, is the culture of the organization. And what you see today is a lot of companies and a lot of good leaders spending time thinking about what kind of company do we want to be, what's going to position us to be successful in the marketplace, the way we treat each other, making it a good home for people, for good talent to be in the company, and also to be effective with customers in the marketplace. So it's more about, the way I see this human capital paradigm playing out today, is about culture and either the shifting of culture or creating a culture that's going to be compelling.
Well, you know, and we haven't talked too much about you, but you've also had a very successful career, from even being the CEO of an energy company to running learning and development, some of the leading learning and development companies in the world, and now working with one of the top leadership companies in the world, which has been one of the top leadership companies for, I think, almost half a century now. And nobody comes on the show without being asked our famous question, which is, you know, what is your secret to success? What do you think are some of the key traits that drive you into being in the top 5% of your market?
Ion Careers now reveals the secrets to success.
So, Jim, I have to ask you, what is your secret to success?
Oh, I just try to do the right thing, I suppose. I've been very lucky in my career because I've had a number of excellent mentors, a number who've really stood out, one in the United States where I started my career, another one in France who was a German executive who was also outstanding as a mentor. And what these people did was they let me spread my wings and test my capabilities, but always provided a safety net so that if I failed or if I, you know, didn't perform as they had hoped, I wouldn't fall. And also I wouldn't do damage to the organization. I've been lucky, I've been successful, but it has been because I've had those kinds of mentors over the course of my career. Nobody's perfect, but you try to do the right thing, and if you do and you treat the people around you appropriately, then you know you'll be successful.
Eye on Careers.
In association with Laymoon.com, jobs, courses, and all things career.
I think two interesting concepts there. One, picking the right mentor, having a right mentor. And the other one where you said nobody's perfect. I almost said, you know, you're touching on the role failure plays in a success story, that, you know, in many instances, failure is a stepping stone to success. Mm. And how do you see failure playing into a success narrative?
Well, this is full circle to where we started this discussion tonight, because it's really about learning from experience. So when we talked about that agility concept, that learning agility concept, it's more about being able to learn from experience, whether it's success or failure, and apply that lesson. And so really consciously understanding what lesson I'm learning. We talked about self-awareness too. So reflecting on the situation and then applying the lessons really can be a powerful way to go forward.
And I think, you know, if you just bring it right down to the grassroots level, you know, it's, you know, I know one time I lost a pitch and I called up the guy that I had, the client, you know, obviously they picked someone else, I asked them, you know, why did I lose? To try to get that feedback, which was really uncomfortable. And it was it sparked almost a lifetime relationship, because he started giving me some really candid feedback, and you know, I was a bit new, and he said I lacked the confidence, and so then I started I could really pinpoint on how to improve my presentation with that feedback. Is that kind of the type of thing you're talking about?
That's exactly
how to use this.
That's exactly what I'm talking about, and that's about seeking the feedback that we talked about earlier as well. Really, sometimes those lessons are hard to learn. Sometimes they're hard things to hear. But actually, if you take the time to think about it and reflect on it and use that information, it's great at building the muscle of continuous self-improvement.
But now, shouldn't organizations institutionalize process within them to facilitate this, to say, look, you know, what kind of processes can they create? And the other thing is that I think on an individual level, you know, they don't institutionalize process, so they don't get institutional memory. And, you know, when certain individuals leave who are exhibiting these winning behaviors, those winning behaviors leave with them. Is that another issue?
So there are lots of ways to institutionalize it. You talked about one, which is these 360-degree feedback loops in the performance management or development processes. That's one way of doing it. But actually, a lot of it comes down to the individual and the ability of the individual to want to improve. You know, we spend most of our life at work, and so doing a good job makes you feel fulfilled. And so you can change the way you behave, you can change the way you perform by learning about yourself and developing yourself, not relying just on the processes of the organization. Yes, those processes are good for capturing some organizational memory, if you will, but if we're talking about careers and people's careers, it's up to the individual to take the bull by the horn sometimes.
And have the take the initiative, and I think that's one of the other things that's is lacking. And so many people, they're in the back seat, and they're wanting someone else to drive the car. So when they can blame someone else when the car goes left when it's supposed to go right. Mm. And well, that's new. What would your final piece of advice be for anybody out there who wants to take the next step in finding their success?
I'd say understand your skills, understand what you're good at, and exploit that. Understand the things that you're not so good at, and see if you can develop the skills that you might find a little bit lacking. So self-understanding is important. And the second thing is to build your agility, because it's an important element of being successful. That defines potential. If you tend to seek out the company of people that are just like you, then consciously seek out people that aren't like you, and that builds people agility. If you tend to look at change as a barrier, step back and pause and think of it as an opportunity and how you can exploit change as an opportunity. That allows you to bust the cycle, if you will, of staying in your comfort zone and become more agile, which can help you become a better leader.
So some really good advice there, and I think just reminds me, I think it was Darwin who said, it's not the fastest or strongest species that will survive, it's the one that's most adapted to change. Mm. And they say in the 21st century, our only constant will be change. So it can be truer words. And thank you so much, Jim, for coming out and spending some time with us and sharing your insights, and hopefully we can have you on again sometime soon.
It's been great. I really enjoyed it, and thanks for having me.
Thank you. Coming up, we are now going to look at another type of success, someone who started their own business, chased their own dream, the founder of MyFarrah.com. Coming up, for anyone who's been dreaming of starting their own business or wants to understand the risks and challenges involved, this is one interview coming up you do not want to miss.